Now I'd like to introduce our guest speaker for the evening, Mike Shimei. Mike has had a long career in clinical chemistry and is presently Director of Chemistry at Gamma Dynacare. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Mike Shimei.
Thank you very much for inviting me here this evening. I just wanted to begin the evening by giving a brief background of my history in lab work. I graduated from the University of Windsor longer than I want to think, and obtained a master's degree in clinical chemistry. At that time, when I graduated from school in the early 70s, there was a real need for people at my level of education to get involved in lab testing. Prior to this, there was a number of different areas of chemistry that you might look at sodium and do all the types of things that most chemists deal with sodium. But in my field, we wanted to know how we can do sodiums well, fast, efficiently, and provide information to the physician to make informed decisions on treatment of patients. From there, I hopped, skipped, and jumped a couple positions to St. Michael's Hospital in Toronto, where I was a clinical chemist for approximately 12 years and was involved with a number of areas in that hospital. It was a terrific learning experience for myself personally as well. In 1987, I moved to the Royal Victoria Hospital in Barrie, where the hospital wanted to institute a new program. They were becoming a base hospital for Simcoe County and was involved in setting up the new hospital. I don't know if any of you ever travel up to Muskoka. When you go up Highway 400, when you get to the point where you can go Highway 11 or Highway 400, on the right-hand side is Georgian College. And right next to Georgian College is the new Royal Victoria Hospital, which is quite a site, actually. It's a terrific facility serving the people of Simcoe County. From there, I left Barrie and was involved in a number of consulting positions with the Ministry of Health, and recently in August came on board to Dynacare Medical Laboratories, which is located on Airport Road just north of the 407. I wanted to preface my talk today with an understanding that I'm here to discuss the ins and outs of PSA testing, how it's done, why it's done, the number of things we'll get to. I'll try to provide any insight as to what the test result may mean, but obviously this is something that your physician, you will have to discuss. In my household, I have three daughters, and one of the most popular shows that we watch all the time is CSI and CSI Miami, CSI Vegas. And it's quite interesting to see how things are dramatized on TV as to what's done in the lab. And it's in reality nowhere near what you'll see on TV. And so tonight what I'd like to discuss with you is I'm going to present you what I plan to discuss, and that is how PSA is, what PSA is, where it's performed in the province of Ontario, who does this test, why is the test done, and when is it done, and how is it done. And we're going to touch on briefly on each one of those, and I'm sure some of the stuff from your previous speakers, I'm sure, has been discussed, but I won't dwell on some of those issues that you've already, I'm sure, are well aware of. So what is PSA? PSA is a protein that's produced in the prostate. Proteins are amino acids. You put them together and they're called proteins. And the name is misleading. When you see the word specific, you think, well, it's only found there. But in reality, PSA is found in other tissues that are not prostatic in origin. Some of them I listed here, colon, kidney, and liver. PSA has also been isolated in tumor tissues outside of the prostate, in breast cancer cells, and tissue extracts of breast cells which are cancerous. Again, it's not only a protein that's found in men. PSA has been isolated in colostrum. That's the milk that's newborns are given during breastfeeding when they're first born. It has the antibodies that a baby needs when they're first born to fight off infection until their own immune system kicks in. It's also found in amniotic fluid. That's the fluid that surrounds the baby during the gestational period of development. It's also found in what's affectionately referred to as the female prostate, Skene's gland. So the point that you should take away from this is that even though we're talking about the prostate, which most people associate with men, even though it has the word specific in it, it's by no means specific to men. And herein lies one of the issues that's important with PSA as far as the test is concerned, and that is its use as a screening tool. And as you can see, the advocates the people who do not advocate screening will point to this at all times and saying, you know, it's really not a protein, it's really not something that we can only detect in men and that we can only detect in the prostate gland. Briefly, I just wanted to touch on the function of the PSA. It's a protein, as I said. When it's in the seminal fluid, its main function is to make that fluid more liquid so that it increases sperm motility. There's three forms of PSA that are circulating in your blood. Together, they're referred to as the total PSA. In our lab in Brampton, we perform about 600 PSAs a day. Just to give you a feel for that, in most hospital labs, and we'll get to them eventually, when I was involved in the hospital lab, we might do, I don't know, maybe 20 patients a day. So it's quite substantial, the number that we do. And out of those 600 tests, approximately 95% of them have a total PSA requested. About 5%, the physician will request a free PSA. And so PSA has three forms. There's a form that's bound to a protein called anti-chymotrypsin. It's not important, the name is not important. The second part is free PSA. It's PSA that's floating in your blood and bound to nothing. And then there's another portion of PSA which is bound to another protein called a macroglobulin. Now again, that's not important, the name. The important thing is that this is incorrect here, that the PSA we test here only measures the top two portions, the bound here and here. This one is a protein that we can't determine. So when we do a total PSA, we're measuring this part and this part. And when a free PSA is ordered, it's just measuring this. PSA is performed in laboratories in Ontario. There's essentially two types of labs in Ontario, medical laboratory labs. There's other labs that do other types of testing, but medical laboratories test specimens. Specimens come from human beings. And there's two types of labs in Ontario, one public and one private. In the public labs, under these labs are hospital labs and the public health lab. There's a main public health, central public health lab located at Islington and the 401. Next to the Labatt's breweries, there's the public health lab, and just east of that, there's the Ministry of Environment lab. That's the main public health lab in Ontario. Predominantly, public health labs are dealing with microbiology testing, if there is anything dealing with the SARS, the E. coli outbreak in Waukegan, all that type of testing would have been done there. And the hospital labs are the other component of the public health of the laboratory system in Ontario. The private labs, up until about 10 years ago, there were a number of private labs, larger private labs and smaller labs, and as a result of restructuring in healthcare, a lot of these smaller labs were bought out by larger labs. And as of today, there's predominantly three major labs in Ontario: Dynacare, MDS and Canadian Medical Laboratories. It's important to understand that even though we dramatize healthcare on TV and in the cinema, it's interesting to note that 70% of a patient's file is made up of medical laboratory tests. If you go into the hospital and are admitted as an inpatient, the file that we have on you, 70% of that are lab tests. And of that 70%, over 70% of that, the decisions are made on treatment, and the test results are used to decide what area or what the prognosis or diagnosis would be. So it's important to understand that medical laboratories have sort of been in the back of the healthcare picture, but in fact, they're one of the most important aspects of healthcare in Ontario. So what's the difference between a public lab and a private lab? And again, we discussed this before with some people here. It's all about money. It's how you get paid. And herein lies the differences between a public lab, publicly funded lab, and a private lab. In $1998, and so the figures I have, that's when I was most involved with it, there was approximately $1 billion spent a year on lab testing in Ontario. And the way that money was divvied up was approximately 50-50, 50% public, 50% private. In the public sector, hospital labs, they're funded globally. Another word for global funding is envelope funding. And in the private sector, they're funded on a fee-for-service basis. Global funding means the government will give the hospitals an envelope full of money, and they say, this money will have to last from April 1st of this year to March 31st of next year. If you have unexplained increases that you have to account for, like recently with the SARS issue, it's more or less you're on your own. And it's akin to, it's based on previous allocations and any type of special funding that the hospital may attempt to implement. Some hospitals want to take out a lot of the cardiovascular surgery out of the downtown hospitals and provide it in community hospitals. Those are the types of things that decide on how much money the hospitals will get. Just to give you an idea, the hospital I was at in Barrie, our operating budget was in the $70 million range in a year. Go downtown to UHN, the larger hospitals, you're into the hundreds of millions of dollars for funding. But that has to include everything. That includes surgery, it includes obstetrics and gynecology, lab services, radiology. And the hospital divvies up where they're going to put that money. Again, simply, hospitals are given an envelope funded amount of money. If you run out, it's like having your line of credit. You have a line of credit extended at the $10,000 and you decide you want to do a renovation. You go to the bank and you say, can I extend my line of credit? The good news is you get the money. The bad news is that you increase your debt load. And if you don't pay it off in a year and the next year you have a child going to university and you've got to come up with more money, you can see that it can get quite expensive. In the private sector where I am presently, we're paid on a fee-for-service basis. We're paid as we provide the service. And the way we're paid is based on LMS units. LMS stands for labor, materials, and supplies. The government has decided that for doing serum Pepsi-Colas, this is how much we feel this test would cost based on these three parameters. So for example, HDL cholesterol. HDL cholesterol is the good cholesterol. The name of the game is to have a high HDL. It protects you against cardiovascular disease. Private labs are paid 18 LMS units. One LMS unit is worth about 52 cents. So every time a private lab does an HDL, we're reimbursed $9.31 from the government. And here, just to show you, there's a HDL cluster right there. It's 18, 18 units there. This is the fee schedule for laboratory tests in the province of Ontario. This is available on the Government of Ontario website. You will not find PSA on this list. In Ontario, lab tests are performed by healthcare professionals, medical laboratory technologists. This is a program that is a three-year post-secondary education. Presently, there's four sites in Ontario that provide training for MLTs in Toronto, Windsor, Kingston, and recently in Sudbury at Cameron College. In Sudbury, Laurentian University will be opening up, if not already opened up, their new medical school. This right now, as most professions, and certainly in my age group, becoming a very depleted profession. A lot of my colleagues are retiring, and there's nobody to take our place at the other end. As a side note, right now, because I used to teach at the Michener Institute prior to here, was a program coordinator for the MedLab Science program. The job opportunities in this field is outstanding. Unfortunately, a lot of the high schools right now are not knowledgeable in this particular career path. Typically, we were getting a lot of students who were in university who had had a 3 or 4 year science degree, got out, and there was no jobs, and they end up coming to us. A laboratory technologist is someone basically who is defined as someone who can exercise independent judgment. And a lot of times in the vernacular, lab technologist is used synonymously with lab technician. And a lab technologist, again, as I said, is someone who can exercise independent judgment. This is wording that's actually taken from legislation in the Public Health Act. Laboratory technician is someone who has limited skills and usually, if not always, is works under the supervision of a lab technologist. So laboratory technologists are the people who are performing the PSA tests. The MLTs are part of, are licensed by the province of Ontario. There's a College of Medical Laboratory Technologists, just like there's a College of Physicians and Surgeons, just like there's a College of Nurses, just like there's a College of Pharmacists. If you're not a member of the college, you can't work in Ontario. It's like a doctor practicing without a license. The colleges are here to protect the public. Their mandate is to not to monitor the quality of tests that you do, but to protect the public. Just to put things into perspective about PSAs, I just wanted to draw your attention to where the lab technologist fits in the healthcare group. And I wanted to use the analogy of physician. The physician will order a test. He'll order a PSA. He will order a cholesterol. The MLT will perform the test. The physician will get that result and make a clinical interpretation of that test result. He'll take that PSA test result and decide treatment based on that result. What the MLT does, the interpretation that the MLT provides, is whether technically that result is a valid result. Is that a result that I can give to the physician so that he can make an informed decision on the path he's going to pursue with your treatment? The MLT is someone who has knowledge and skill, excuse me, and judgment, knowledge based on the theoretical testing. They'll know the theoretical components of how the test is done. They have the technical skill to do the test, and they have the judgment, the analytical judgment skills to decide whether that test is one that is valid. There's two reasons why a PSA is ordered to diagnose a disease or monitor disease and treatment. Screening of the general population is not a reason at this point to do PSA. And as I said at the beginning, it's not something that's related specifically to men and specifically to the prostate gland. In most labs that do PSA testing, I want to advise you that not all the labs do PSA testing. In the hospitals will not do PSA testing because of the volume of work and they don't get paid for it. So most labs that do test PSA have a general turnaround time, a TAT, of approximately 24 hours. And the clock starts ticking from the time we receive the specimen to the time we get that result onto our computer system. Approximately 48 hours from the time we receive that specimen, that result is in your physician's office. So it's an old diagram, but I wanted just to talk about how we do the test. I'm sure that all the people in this room have had blood taken before and are well aware of the process involved. And what happens is that we take inject the needle into your vein, take some blood out, and test that blood. What we do is put it into a centrifuge, and this is one of the test tubes here, there's another one here, and here. And that specimen is spun at approximately 3,000 RPMs for greater than 10 minutes. This is the tube that we have without any blood in it. This is a tube that has some blood taken in it. And after it's gone into the centrifuge, it comes out looking like this. And what happens is at the bottom of this tube, you can't see clearly here, but here you can, there's an inert material that when it's centrifuged finds its place here. And what its role is to separate this part, which we refer to as serum, from this part, which is referred to as the cells. The importance is that not so much with PSA, but there are some tests that if this material wasn't there, would leak from the cells into the serum and give falsely elevated results. PSA is not one of those tests. However, things like potassium and glucose are affected. If we leave this specimen without this material, potassiums will be artificially elevated and quite significantly. So normal potassium is between 3.5 and 5. We can get anything up to 10 or 12 if we let it sit on the clot long enough. What happens is that this tube of blood actually, if you were to take it after it's clotted, it's spun down. When you turn this tube upside down, it won't move. When you take the blood, clotting factors in your blood are activated by material in the tube that form a clot. This one was not clotted completely. It still needed to be sit around a little bit longer, and you can see this dark black material here. That's a clot that's being formed. So again, this would be a whole blood sample, and this is serum. And this is the material that we'll test for PSA, not this. How the test is done is a portion of that serum is mixed with some coated particles that bind PSA. Then during the process, the excess PSA that's not bound to that is washed away, and we add some solution called trigger solutions that result in chemiluminescence. The method we use is referred to as a chemiluminescence method. It's a method that is performed in MDS, CML, our laboratory, as well as most hospital labs. The reason it's performed is that it's a much more sensitive test and can detect smaller concentrations than the older methods. I'm not sure if anybody was, maybe there is, and you know, 15, 20 years ago, when I did this assay, we usually have to do a radioisotopic assay. You have to use radioactive material. It would take us a couple of days to do the test. What is chemiluminescence? Basically, chemi means, as it refers to chemicals. Luminescence refers to the fact that it's giving off light. So chemiluminescence essentially means light that's emitted via chemical reaction, and it's that light that we measure. And the amount of light that's measured is directly proportional to how much PSA is in your blood. It's similar to a firefly. There's an enzyme in fireflies called luciferase, meaning light-bearing, and it triggers a reaction that produces energy, and this energy is emitted as light in the abdomen region of the firefly. So it's essentially very similar to this type of reaction. This is our lab in Brampton. It's interesting that when I was involved in RVH, when we moved into our new lab on the 400, our whole lab was 15,000 square feet. And in hospital labs, in our lab as well, there's a number of different areas. There's chemistry, hematology, blood bank, microbiology, histology and cytology, in some places molecular biology, that kind of stuff. But we had a whole area of 15,000. This whole room here, which just seats the chemistry portion of our lab, is 15,000. So in the Vic, this was the size of the entire lab. So it's quite a large lab. And if you're looking at this right now, your back would be to Airport Road. So this is looking eastward. And there's a number of instruments down this side. This is the walk-in refrigerator and freezer that we use to store our specimens. We keep our specimens for 7 days. At the end of 7 days, they're discarded. This instrument here is an instrument called the Architect. It's made by a company called Abbott Laboratories, and this is the instrument that we do the PSA testing on. We have six of these in our lab, and this instrument is called an immunoassay analyzer. The tests that it does are PSA, free PSA, testosterone. It does a number of female hormones, FSH, LH, prolactin. It also does tests to assess your anemia status, if you have one. It does it folic acid, vitamin B12, those types of tests. This is the instrument right here. This is referred to as a 2000. In our lab, we hooked two of them up together to make a 4000, 2000 plus 2000. This test, this instrument here will perform about 150 tests an hour, and again, that's quite substantial for this type of analyzer, because it's the tests that it does are quite involved, long involved. The tests that the way we used to do this test years ago, as I said, were by radioisotopic methods, where we had to use radioactive material as a real difficult, long, laborious procedure. So we can do about 300-350 tests an hour. And what happens at the front of this, specimens are loaded. They come along a conveyor belt. You can see some specimens in here already, and I'll show you what it looks like inside here in a second. But all the processes that are involved, the pipetting of the specimen, the adding of reagents, they're all done under this box. And once they're completed, they come out the end here and go up the queue. If this line gets full of specimens, it moves them to this line here before an operator takes them off the analyzer. This is just a picture of the other end where they're coming into the analyzer. And again, as I said to you before, you can notice this yellow material here is the serum, and again, that's the stuff we look at. The probe will go right inside the tube, take out a specimen, and put it into a reaction vessel where the reaction takes place. And all these are done under time sequences. Everybody's sample gets monitored the same way. And this is what it looks like inside. And these little vials I'll show you in a second are reagents that are used to do the test. And we have, as I said, a number of tests we do on this instrument. And again, here's another look at the specimens coming out of the analyzer, and again, the serum. That's what we're using. And the nice thing about the tubes that we're using now, we can just spin them and quickly put them on, and it improves the turnaround time for you and for your physician. And this is what the reagents look like. This is the microparticle business I was talking to you about, and this is a conjugate here that helps, that aids in the chemiluminescence reaction itself. Again, this is the opening of that 4000 instrument I was telling you about. There's two instruments that look identical, and these are all the consumable products. And again, this door is shut, and it's operated by the instrument. And the lab technologist will instruct the instrument to do the test, and it does it. And again, this is another view for the reagents, how they're all lined up in here. And this is a compartment that's totally refrigerated. And what happens is that when we put the specimen on the instrument doesn't know what test to do on it. It goes to our computer. The computer says, this is Mr. Smith's specimen. I want a PSA done on it, and I want a vitamin B12. Sends it back to the instrument. The instrument does the test. The next specimen comes along. What do you want me to do on that? Well, I just want a TSH done in this test. Okay, and does a TSH. And that's how it works. It's called a bidirectional interface. And again, just a close-up picture of these specimens, or excuse me, these reagents. What we do is we have 6 analyzers in our lab, and because of the volume of work we do, it's not feasible for us to take everybody's tube out and say, oh, you know, that we do a PSA on this test. This test needs a Pepsi-Cola, this needs a Coke, that sort of thing. So what we do is we mirror all these instruments, so we have PSA on each instrument, and so that the technologist can just put it on any instrument. The instrument will talk to our computer system. It will tell the instrument what test to do and go forward. So we don't have to worry about putting them on specific instruments because we've got the same test on each one. Things to remember about testing in general, and that is not only with PSAs, but with any test you have done. It could be a glucose. You may want to do an enzyme, a heart test enzyme, or a liver function test on you. Try to avoid having large meals prior to the testing. Now, the reason that I'm suggesting that is a number of times patients will come in and they say they're fasting, and it's important that we have a fasting specimen. When we centrifuge that blood, that yellow portion I was showing you before, the serum is milky. We refer to that as lipemic. And what happens is that lipemia is a result of triglycerides, and the triglycerides can inhibit this interaction with the microparticles I was telling you about where the PSA binds. So even though it's not something that competes for reaction, it inhibits the reaction to take place. So it's a good practice to get into not to have anything to eat between 6 to 8 hours prior to having your test done. So for example, if you go to bed at 12 o'clock and you've had a coffee or a beer, by the time you wake up in the morning, that should be clear of your system and you can go and have your test done. But if you're going to have a test done at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, just be aware that you know you shouldn't be having your lunch because it'll interfere with your test. And then at the end of the day, you're going to have to go back and take your blood again. Rigorous physical activity can affect the prostate, such as bicycle riding. So this may cause an artificial rise in PSA levels. So if there's anybody who even recreationally goes for bike rides regularly, if you're going to have your PSA tested, you know, try to refrain from that for 2 or 3 days prior to having your blood tested. Prior to PSA coming on the market as a test to assess prostatic function, there was a test called acid phosphatase, and it was not a good test at all. And the reason it was not a good test was that too many things made it artificially elevated, and one of them was a digital rectal examination. And it wasn't uncommon when I was at St. Mike's for patients to come in and complain that their acid phosphatases were elevated after it had this procedure, and it really did affect the results, and the patient would have to come back and have their blood withdrawn. There was some controversy as far as PSA is concerned, but recent studies have shown that this does not increase PSA. There are some medications that can also cause an increase or decrease in PSA. And some people who are on cyclophosphamide and methotrexate, they may affect the PSA level. And it's not to say that you have to get off these medications to have the test done. That doesn't make sense. But it's something that the physician, I'm sure, hopefully is aware of, and you should be aware of as well. Manipulation of the prostate by biopsy or resection, that kind of thing, can also affect the results you'll get, the PSA level you'll get. So it's important to have a PSA done prior to these types of things. And if there is manipulation, if you have one of these procedures performed, it's wise to wait approximately 6 weeks after to have your PSA drawn. Again, one of the things that I'm constantly reminding the people in our lab is that simply garbage in, garbage out, and if you're not, if you don't provide a sample that's truly indicative of your state at that time, it's going to be a meaningless test. The physician will not be able to make any informed decision on it, and invariably results in you having to come back and take your blood. And taking blood, it depends on individuals. Some people are quite good at it. Some people don't like having things stuck on their arms, period. There's people who work in their labs all their life. They don't mind sticking a needle in somebody's vein, except as long as it's not theirs. And it's important that you understand that, you know, we're trying to do things right the first time. And even in our lab, I don't endorse any types of things where we can cut corners. I subscribe to the square circle theory. That is, if you have a procedure that's like this, you don't start out like this because everything gets warped. So it's important that you understand some of these aspects of it here. And PSA may temporarily rise due to other conditions such as infection. So if you're having an infection for whatever cause, it's good to remember that, you know, wait till after this is subsided. If you're on antibiotics, wait to see it until it's cleared up prior to having your blood tested. Another thing, this is my own opinion and things I've learned from my own experience in this over the years, is that it's important to stick to the same lab. And this isn't a statement that the labs are incorrect. One lab cannot give the same result as other labs. It's quite the contrary. In Ontario, we have an external quality control program that's run by the Ministry of Health. And in that, essentially what happens is that they send us specimens. We don't know the result of that specimen. And we do the test. And we're compared to our peer groups. So those tests, those labs, regardless of whether they're in a hospital or a private lab, if they're using, in our case, an architect, we're compared to them. And we're also compared to labs that use other methods. But nothing is perfect, and there's no such thing as getting the same result every time you have a test done, and there is some variability. To minimize that variability, it's always been my belief that I suggest people always go to the same lab. And this doesn't only refer to PSA. A lot of people have their cholesterol and triglycerides checked periodically. There's variability in these tests as well. Another test is thyroid stimulating hormone. People who have a cancerous thyroid gland and have their thyroid removed and are on replacement therapy and they're monitored by their TSH. It's important to go to the same lab, and this is an easy thing to confirm because when you go to your physician's office, generally speaking, he will take the blood himself, he or she. Or if he's in a building where there is a specimen collection center, it's usually the same collection center. It may be run by MDS, it may be run by CML, or it may be run by our lab. But it's important that you understand that, and it certainly would help any questions that may come up later on. Keep a diary of your results, and remember that this result, this blood, even though we take it, this belongs to you. And you've entrusted us by the fact that you've come to our lab, not only Dynacares, but the hospitals or any other private labs. And we are providing a service to you to perform this test. So keep a diary of your test and log in where your PSA is on a daily basis, or whenever it's being taken. So just to go over what we discussed today, we talked about what PSA is, and the fact that it's not specific in the sense that it's not specific to the prostate, it's not specific to men.
It's a test that's done in medical laboratories, both public and private, hospital, private labs. It's a test that's performed by healthcare professionals, medical laboratory technologists, who are licensed in the province of Ontario. The province of Ontario is one of the few, if not the only, provinces in Canada where you not only have to have a certification from a national body, you also have to be licensed. We pay for our licenses every year, and if we don't pay, we don't work. PSA is a test that's done to diagnose disease and monitor disease and treatment. And it's a test that you can depend on, generally speaking, and I really firmly believe this, and most labs will do this test within 24 hours, and invariably, this result will be available to your physician within 48 hours. And if you have the test done on Friday, in all likelihood, it will be in his office on Monday. This is the method we use, chemiluminescence. And finally, pardon me, don't be afraid to ask questions. If you come into any laboratory, whether it's our lab, it's the hospital, you have questions, ask. You have a right to know. And we have a right to treat you with the utmost dignity and compassion when you come into our lab for services. You have a right to know, and you have a right to ask questions. And if I can be of any help, if you have any questions later on or even down the road, please don't hesitate to give me a call. We're just down the street. I have some business cards here if you would like. I'd be more than happy to distribute them. And again, thank you very much for your attention, and thank you for this opportunity to come and discuss this test with you. Thank you.